There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
People can change anything they want to. And that means everything in the world. Show me any country, and there'll be people in it. It's time to take the humanity back into the center of the ring and follow that for a time. You know, think on that. Without people, you're nothing. Without people, you're nothing.
Stoke the fire.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, good middle of the day. Whatever time of day it is, whatever day it is. Today's a beautiful day here in England. It's Matt Stocks joining you from Bristol. My cohort, my co-host, my dear friend, my brother, Jesse Leach, joins me from Woodstock. It's early over there where you are. It's even earlier where our guest is, but how is it looking where you are today? A beautiful Sunday?
It is. You could write a song about how beautiful it is. The sun is coming through the trees. The birds are chirping. It's just one of those magical mornings that I cherish so much. And one of the reasons I even moved up here is because of mornings like this morning. So that's how good it is.
Amazing. Is there any writing on the cards for you today?
100%. I've been writing every single day. And I've been getting up earlier, which for those people who have no idea, this is the earliest podcast I think I've ever done. But it's nice because the early morning hours are where I get a lot of my good thinking done, meditating, preparing for the day. It's a shift in my life over the past few years that I cherish. My mornings are my time to be creative, so I'm in good spirits.
Well, speaking of early mornings, our guest joins us from the West Coast, I believe, of America, where it is 5:30 a.m. his time. Now, talk about rock stars sleeping in. Not the case with this man. He is an early bird. He's here to catch the worm. So let's bring him on the show. I'm really looking forward to this one. Hot Water Music frontman. And just one of the nicest men in punk rock. I love this dude. I saw him very recently, so it's a pleasure to be welcoming him on to Stoke the Fire. Chuck Reagan, please join us around the metaphorical proverbial campfire, dude. Great to see you.
Good morning.
How are you, gentlemen? Good to see you.
10 out of 10. Have you two ever met before? Have you two ever played a festival or hung out or spent time?
I have never met him officially, but I have been side stage many times, and I've actually screamed in your face back in the late 90s in small punk rock shows. I was probably 5 feet from you, putting my arm around you, but we've never officially met.
Well, nice to meet you, brother.
Yeah, pleasure.
What an amazing story. Let's start there then. So when did you first see Hot Water Music live?
So it would have been on the second record, which, you know, I was really into aggressive, heavy hardcore, like Integrity, Bloodlet. I was in a band called Current at the time, playing shows with bands like Overcast, Mike, who's now in Killswitch, Candiria. So very aggressive, sort of darker poetry. And I started getting into Discord Records type stuff, and somebody passed along a Hot Water Music CD to me, and I probably didn't stop listening to that for a good solid 3 or 4 years. Obsessed with the lyrics, the tone of it. It was just so different. It was a breath of fresh air for me because it just felt like it was raw. It was honest. It was emotive. It wasn't hiding behind dark poetry. It wasn't pretending to be what it wasn't. And me and all my friends, it was a small group of us where I knew every single word, and got to see you guys at this little place in New Bedford, Massachusetts. I'd say maybe 50, 55 people at most. And we are just, inches from the band and arm in arm with my brothers singing along with you guys. And it was kind of an altering moment for me as not only a musician, but a young man, realizing that you didn't have to sort of like posture. You didn't have to be like tough, hardcore kid. You could actually wear your heart on your sleeve. And that suited me a lot better as a person. And that shifted me into what I do now with Killswitch. It was very much inspired by bands like yourself, Chamberlain, Split Lip, that era of bands that came out of the aggressive music and still played it aggressively, but with a totally different feel. So that was a game changer. And yeah, the lyrics especially just cut me to the core. You felt like you were reading the story of somebody's life, and I could relate to it so much. So yeah, huge fan. And up till recently, we played in Alabama at, was it called Furnace Fest? Yeah. We had, you guys had played earlier that day, and me and Mike, the bass player, are huge fans. So we were fanboying out on the side stage watching you guys. And just, I've just been a fan of yours from day one when I first learned who you guys were and just how you carry yourself as a human being, not to blow up your spot. But big fan. And it's totally an honor and a pleasure to finally actually meet you on camera.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, man. That's an honor.
Do you remember that time period he's referring to, Chuck? Because you're absolutely pretty good with memory.
Here and there.
Selective.
Yeah, that would have been like 98, probably 98, I think, yeah. Ish, 97, 98.
Yeah, we only played New Bedford. Would that have been the Space? No, that was in Worcester, wasn't it?
No, yeah, that was in Worcester. It was a club. I think it was a, I don't know if it's a VFW hall. I mean, you couldn't
yeah,
have.
That, I mean,
you couldn't have fit more people. Yeah,
sure.
And I believe it was a festival. I think Today Is the Day might have been on that too. It was a crazy weird lineup. I don't remember that. Those days for me, they blend together because I was definitely taking a lot of drugs and being a crazy kid back then. So I don't really remember, but I know it was in New Bedford at a small space, and it was one of those places where the walls were dripping just with sweat. It was just yeah. It couldn't have been more hot and disgusting, but it was incredible. Great memory.
I can completely relate in so many ways. I think a lot of us that have found ourselves in this type of music scene, music community, that had anything to do with hardcore, punk rock, whatever, call it what you want. It seemed like there was a lot of like-minded folks, you know. I feel incredibly lucky. You know, I've thought about it a lot over the past couple years, especially throughout the whole shutdown and pandemic and everything kind of going awry. But just thought over the years of how incredibly lucky and blessed I feel to have somehow ended up at the right place at the right time to meet the folks that steered me, helped steer me into a music community like this. You know, it's changed my life for the better, you know, those same years that we're talking about, you know, and touring for the first time. You know, I think Hot Water's first tour was the summer of 95. And we haven't really stopped since then, other than, you know, maybe changing different, you know, the band's had a couple different hiatus, you know, moments where we've kind of split, done other projects. But, you know, we've just kept going. And I look, you know, we play these festivals like the one in the UK where I just saw you, Matt, and, you know, running across all these old mates, all these old friends, you know, that we essentially grew up with within this scene. And it has just been incredible to kind of look back and realize like how, you know, I think Hot Water's 28 years old this year, you know, and it's just amazing. I feel really lucky to be a part of it. Just lucky to be a piece of the puzzle. Yeah.
Well, it's something that stays with you. I feel like for me, you know, it's not just music, it's a lifestyle. You meet people that forever alter your way of thinking, bands
True.
That yeah. forever alter your way of thinking. And, you know, I just think of a moment now that just popped into my head, coming back into Killswitch after having left and leaving the tour life behind and kind of going a different path, but coming back, playing a festival in Germany. And Randy from Lamb of God was standing side stage. I was wearing an Operation Ivy t-shirt. I had never met Randy before personally. I came off stage he started singing an Operation Ivy song to me. That's how we kind of met. And then from that point, we became fast friends because we have this love of Operation Ivy. I see that happen to me all over the place. You know, that specific time frame, those bands that you grew up listening to, whether it be, you know, Minor Threat or Black Flag, you see somebody that's wearing that shirt, especially back in those days, you knew you had a friend. You knew you had somebody that spoke that language, and that thing, that lifestyle, that it just stayed with me forever, and it shaped me as a man. The person that I am now is so different from who I was back then, but I wouldn't be who I am. I actually don't even know if I'd be alive without those people in that community.
This is very true. I know that's true for me. Yeah, absolutely.
You two also share a similarity in that you both grew up in a, you know, fairly religious household where punk and hardcore and metal music was definitely frowned upon. Jesse, why don't you start us off by telling us a bit about, you know, what your dad did for work and what was allowed and what wasn't allowed in the Leach household growing up?
Yeah, I think the word fairly religious is...
I'm downplaying it.
Yes, you are.
Yeah. So my father was and is still the Reverend Dr. Leroy Leach. He's a highly educated man that was on a mission from God, honestly. Like we traveled so much, we would pick up and leave every couple of years to either plant the church or for him to continue his education. And everything we did was to be right with God, and my mother was supportive, and we would go to church 3 times a week. You know, we'd go on Wednesdays for Bible study. People would come to my house. You know, I grew up speaking in tongues and, you know, all like the really hardcore stuff, which I'm sure you can relate to, and we'll let you speak on this because I'm sure you can pick it up from where I'm putting it down. And that made me rebel very hardcore against, to this day, I still get annoyed with organized religion, and I love my folks. They've loosened up a bit, but my mom still sends me scriptures via text. You know, they know I'm working on a new record. My mom will send me Bible scriptures to help, you know, like they're still there doing it, and I love them dearly. I've just chosen a slightly more open-minded, different path these days, but it shaped me incredibly and really sort of in good ways and sometimes in bad ways too.
Oh man, I couldn't relate more. My mother traveled in evangelism and was an entertainer, a ventriloquist, you know, out of all things. And we grew up, you know, she tells me that the first time she took me on the road, I was 9 days old. Like she was in the middle of a tour. She used to tour with Billy Graham, Bill, the Gaithers, you know, so there was a lot of like gospel festivals and, you know, huge revivals that we grew up going to, Southern Baptist mostly, you know, but she would also go to other different denomination type churches, prisons, schools, you name it, you know, she would travel around and sure enough, but yeah, same deal, you know, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday evening, you know, there was always prayer, always Bible study, you know, and yeah, but my brother and I, boy, yeah, we rebelled pretty hardcore, you know, I mean, I found, I think the first thing, I guess, even before skateboarding that kind of turned me was bikes, freestyle. At the time, the movie Rad came out, freestyling blew my mind. All of a sudden, we wanted to freestyle and bike. And there were a couple older kids who, you know, it was the first time I was hearing, you know, Beastie Boys or Metallica or, you know, back in those days, there was no one kind of music, you know, if the kids would come around, put the boom box up on the wall, right where we used to ride our bikes. And, you know, it would go from Beastie Boys to Metallica to Bad Brains to Minor Threat. There was all kinds of wild stuff. And then after that, it was skateboarding, you know, that definitely, you know, it was kind of the first time I'd had that rebellion already, just because, you know, I'm sure you've seen plenty of it, but growing up in a church, growing up in that movement, I witnessed just a ridiculous amount of hypocrisy, you know. And as I became a young teen, I started realizing what I was seeing and questioning it more, and just going off the rail, you know, in a big way. When I got to 12, 13 years old, you know, I started running away, started doing a lot of real nasty stuff to my folks. And, you know, and same deal. I mean, I love them to death. And, you know, we lost my dad a while ago. But, you know, over the past 20 something years, we've had a great relationship, you know. You know, I can relate with them in a lot of ways in terms of spirituality, because I consider myself a spiritual person. But as far as organized religion goes, that's where it just, it kind of stops. It doesn't make sense to me. Doesn't move freely through my head, you know. But yeah, I can relate with you big time. That, and it shaped, I mean, shaped the music, the lyrics, you know, shaped everything over the years. And still does, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I still write about it.
Yeah.
For the most recent record. But I think, you know, having that upbringing, having that sort of moral fiber put into you, you know, that's the good stuff that I still take with me, is how to treat people. Because regardless of the hypocrisy I did see within the church and an organized religion, there was a lot of taking care of your community. My parents would constantly take people into the house. We would, you know, feed the poor, like on the street, handing food to people and looking at them in their eyes. That type of stuff stayed with me. And that's how I took that onto my spirituality. I like how you had made the differentiation. Although my father would say, you still are religious, you just have created your own religion. So we have this debate, but I have a great relationship with them now, and I love them dearly. They're great people, but it did shape me. And I think initially it was the rebellion, and then it sort of became the good parts started to take over as I formed into a young man. And that's where I started to write lyrics that I thought would help people. Yeah. And that's kind of what got me into what I do now, not just with this podcast, but, you know, mental health awareness and just the care and the love that I was taught. That kind of started seeping into my music and my lyrics and my everyday existence. And, you know, that community too, is crazy and as fucked up as some of those kids were, they were some of the most embracing, because it was like you found your tribe of freaks. You know, you found your group of people who could relate to the crazy shit that was going on in your head. You felt a lot less alone. So the community aspect of that as well, the music, to this day is stayed with me, and why I still love to tour and, like you said, go to other countries and see people that you've just known forever. And that type of stuff is incredible. And I also think from the traveling, and correct me if I'm wrong, it kind of shaped you into becoming someone who's comfortable with touring. You know, I traveled a lot as a kid, so I think that's kind of in my blood. So maybe you can speak on that. Do you think that affected you as well?
Oh, 100%. I mean, my mom, she still tours to this day, you know, and she drives herself. It's cool to kind of think back on her history. I mean, I'm talking thousands of performances, and she has 100% been DIY the entire way. The entire way, her whole life, books her own stuff, communicates with, you know, the places that she's traveling, and drives herself, you know, I mean, lives in a van, lives in hotel rooms, and you know, in a lot of ways, it's kind of it did. I mean, we traveled a ton with my mom at an early ages. You know, there were times where she would even pull us out of school, you know, to go do an event, go do something. But yeah, I mean, it definitely was kind of the earliest memories I have was being on the road, you know, doing these trips with her. And then by the time I was however old I was, summer of 95, you know, 19, early 20s, whatever, it felt completely comfortable to be out there, you know. I think it's a healthy thing for young people to travel. I my only wish, I don't have any regrets because I love where I am. I love my family. I love, you know, I don't believe in, I know anything that I would have done different could have altered where I am now. And I love where I am now. So I can't say I regret anything, but sometimes I wish I had traveled more by myself. I find myself talking to a lot of young kids who are in that place where they feel a little lost or unsure with what they want to do, where they want to go. And I always seem to be pushing them or encouraging them, hey, grab a backpack, go to Europe, go to another country, go south, go somewhere, experience different cultures, experience different languages, you know. I mean, I remember the first time traveling overseas. We were actually just talking about this last week and how inspiring it was and how we came back the first time and you look at your own community, you look at your own town surroundings, and you just, you're filled with this energy to help alter it or change it for the better, you know, just by getting out and seeing how other people do it, you know. And I remember coming back from Europe the first time we went over there and just looking around going, man, we're doing it all wrong here. You know, there's so much more we could be doing, you know, to rally young kids, you know. I mean, you remember the early tours and playing overseas in places where, you know, it was kindergarten by day and then punk shows at night. And it's just these community centers where everything happens in the same building. You know, there's food growing outside. I mean, it was just super, super enlightening and inspiring at an early age for sure.
Yeah, travel is tonic for the soul, isn't it? I travel a lot on my own as a DJ and as a single man, and I absolutely love it. It does get lonely sometimes, and sometimes you wish there was someone there to share the experience with you. But when you are on your own traveling around, you have so much more time to think. You get to walk around a lot slower because you're not, you know, trying to march to the beat of anybody else's drum.
Right.
And you can just get lost in cities or countryside. And I wanted to talk to you about nature, Chuck, because I know you're big into, you know, your conservationism and environmentalism. Obviously, you're a very keen fisherman. You, when you're not on tour, you work taking groups out and doing tours and stuff. What's the relationship for you between nature and your spirituality? Because we talk a lot on this show about the healing power and, you know, the medicinal power of just being outside. And we always say if Jesse and I don't go out on our regular hikes or, you know, kayaking, Jesse does, or if we're not out there for an extended period of time, we can feel that dark cloud start to hover above us. And then as soon as you're out, absolutely, you feel the lightness again. So could you, you know, shed a little bit of light on your relationship with the great outdoors?
Sure. I mean, that if I were to have a church, that's my church, you know.
Amen, brother.
What's that?
Amen, brother.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I believe, to me, it's the closest I've ever been to God. And I say that in a way where, you know, God is different to everyone. But to me, you know, since an early age, it has been obvious, it's been clear that there is something greater than us. There's a big picture, right? Call it what you will. I just use the word God usually loosely because that's, people can somewhat interpret that in so many different ways. To me, when I think about something greater, what I'm thinking about is tides, seasons, organisms, life from the bottom of the food chain all the way to the top. I think about death just as much as life, like, you know, and how both roles are completely important and vital on this planet. And I mean, to me, that's what I'm talking about when I feel closest to something like that. I feel the same way. I really need to be in these environments, you know, not only for my well-being, my mental health and everything, but also to pay attention and see changes and impacts, whether they're positive, whether they're negative, but especially negative, to understand and know what I can do as a person to help better our waterways, help better our environment. But yeah, I mean, at home here, I'm a fishing guide when I'm not on the road. A typical year, I would be on the water about 200 days out of the year. You know, it's a rather busy business. It can be as busy as I want it to be. You know, at the end of the day, I'm an independent worker. It's not that much different than being a musician, really. You know, you're doing the same thing. You're going out there, you know, busting your ass, trying to make a great impression, and hopefully you're doing it for the love of it, but you're also hoping people get something out of it. You're hoping that people learn something out of it or take something home with them from, you know, sharing your passion. So in so many ways, it's not that much different. But, you know, I live in Northern California. We're surrounded by rivers, lakes, a lot of beautiful zones. I run three different boats that enable me to do that business year round. If a river blows out, I can go to different places and I mean, it's full time, but I mean, I love it. I love being out there. I need to be out there. It's important for me to, like I said, keep my finger on the pulse, so to speak, on what is happening in our area. I think, you know, people that like to do stuff like this are usually some of the first people to witness and understand what's happening and seeing these impacts that mankind has, you know, on our waterways. We're the ones that are out there, you know, more than most people, where to a lot of other folks, it may just be out of sight, out of mind, so to speak. But yeah, man, I mean, it's, you know, that would be my church. You know, there's a connection that I feel with the big picture, let's call it, when I'm going regularly and I'm paying attention to the moon phases, I'm paying attention to the flows. When I lived that, the flows as in the river flows, because it's ever changing. You know, winter comes, the rivers blow out huge, islands disappear, new islands appear, the river reroutes at times, and you know, it's incredible to find yourself in a situation where you're really connected with everything, you know, most changes that are happening in that environment. When I lived in Florida, and I was fishing a lot of saltwater inshore, I was paying attention to the tides. You had to, you know. And when I worked in the California Delta, same deal. You have to pay attention to the tides, to not only for safety, but, you know, to also find what you're looking for, finding the fish. And there's a feeling that I would get when everything would line up. And I was looking at my numbers, I was looking at my charts, I was looking at the tides, and everything would happen just like it was supposed to. And that feeling of being connected and no one else around you, and you know, like, if I wasn't paying attention to this, if I wasn't connected to this, I wouldn't have found this moment, you know? And those are the things that I live for and strive for, those moments just of being connected. Or you mentioned hiking, you know? There were times I remember hiking the parts of the Appalachian Trail when I was a young kid, and getting off the trail and just kind of seeing something from afar and finding my way and standing in a spot where it felt like no one had ever stood there before, you know, and seeing the sun go down right there, or watching the sunrise in a spot that felt like no one has ever been at that point in time, you know. And that to me is the greater thing than us, you know. It's so easy for us to get lost in just the motion of our society. You know, it's so busy, it's so saturated, especially nowadays. And, you know, everybody's heads are down, buried in their phones. And I feel like in a lot of ways, you know, if we're not careful, life's gonna pass us by if we don't pay attention. You know,
I have to circle back to connectivity. And there's so many points that you touched upon. I'll do my best, because my brain was like, oh, remember that, but stay present to what he's saying. I just can relate to everything you're saying so much. So connectivity would be the first thing that really stuck with me.
Yeah.
I would say during the pandemic, my life changed completely after being on the road constantly for, you know, the greater part of a decade without stopping. That forcing me to stop. And I now live up here in the Catskill Mountains, and it's become my church, a place I absolutely love. I live steps from a river, and I would, you know, come back from tour, and I would come up here before I lived up here. I'd come up here to escape and get lost in the woods and do those things you're talking about. But it wasn't until I lived out here where I had time to go to that river every day and see how it would change and see how it would reroute. If we had a crazy rainstorm, I would run out the next day like, oh, how did it change? Like, that started becoming my routine, and I started to really change profoundly and learn adaptation. And I sort of put that to my life during the pandemic, was be present to the changes that are around you. Nature speaks to us. Nature teaches us.
Totally.
And that adaptation that you learn from being out in the wilderness for survival or for fishing or for hunting or for hiking and knowing your way around, if you put that into your daily life, and the way that I look at everything now is, I used to be very reactive, and now I let things happen. I sit back and I observe before I speak, before I react. And nature taught me that. Nature taught me that you are not in control. The more you try to hold on to these things, whether it be your career, your marriage, whatever the case may be, you're going to be frustrated. You've got to learn balance. And I think connectivity is everything when it comes to being aware of existence and not being distracted by social media or whatever is going on in this artificial world, and being present to little things like yesterday. I spent the entire day on the river on a tube floating with my fiance, just floating down the river.
Yes.
And we watched a beaver swim alongside us building his home. Yeah. And it was a cute, fun moment. And it was like so profound. It was like all this shit that's going on around us. And I'm sitting here still on the side of a river watching this beaver build a dam. And it was so, it might sound silly to some people, but it was such a profound moment. And I have those moments regularly in nature where nature's like, be still.
Yes.
And all the shit around you that you're stressing, whether it be bills or it melts away, and you realize the profundity of nature showing us that it's not that complicated.
It's so true, man. I mean, it really makes you realize how little we need in our life to sustain and to get by. We need fire, food, warmth, you know? And I have a lot of moments out, you know, with some of the places that I guide. You know, we see a lot of bald eagles, golden eagles, ospreys, you know, a lot of beavers, a lot of otters, a lot of wildlife, deer, turkey, pigs. We have mountain lions, all kinds of cats. And in, you know, finding yourself where, you know, you're the only person on the planet that is witnessing that right then and right there. And it feels good when it becomes a very regular thing. I love sharing. That's a big reason why I love guiding. It's a big reason why I love, you know, taking young kids out, you know, on the water with their parents or their mentors, and, you know, sharing this with them or sharing something that, you know, I see all the time. And, you know, but some of these kids, including my son, you know, they may be seeing this for the first time, you know, you know, there's an organization that I work with called Cast Hope. And we bring kids and their mentors out on the water and offer them free fly fishing trips. Honestly, fly fishing is just the vehicle. It doesn't matter, you know, that it just so happens that the organization was started by fly fishermen. But the real point of what we're doing is sharing the outdoors with kids and trying to ignite a spark, and then nurture that flame for them, help build or help just take care of the relationship that they have with their, whoever that mentor is. And I tell you, man, when I started working with that organization, it made me realize that it's probably one of the more important things next to raising my son, you know, but anything outside of my own family, probably one of the more important things that I could be doing. You know, to me, going back to what we were talking about, all the distractions and everything, these days, attention spans are getting shorter. You know, young kids these days, we have a term, we call it, we're in a nature deficit, you know, where a lot of these young kids just do not have as many moments in their life where they are affected by Mother Nature, or they see that beaver, they see that eagle when they're by themselves on a riverbank or out in the woods or something. And, you know, I'm sure any of us who actually care about that, at some point in our life, someone exposed us to that. You know, for me, it was my parents, my grandparents, you know, both my mom and my dad, my mama and papa, like they showed us this at a young age. It blew our minds. And they connected us with Mother Nature by camping, by fishing, hunting, growing food. And as we grew older, we still would hunt for that feeling and hunt for those moments and search for the, and enjoy that passion. But as we grew older, then we get to a point where we realize like, hey, I need to actually take care of these places, right? And by them exposing that to us, it gave us a reason, and growing up with it, it now gives us a reason to protect it and pass it on to the next generation. And that's what I feel is so incredibly important for us to be doing, is igniting that spark in the youth of today, igniting that spark and try to help share that passion with young kids today so they could grow up with a reason to fight for it and protect it when it needs to be fought for. Otherwise, I believe that it's just out of sight, out of mind, you know. Go ahead.
No, you go, Chuck. Go on.
Some of these Cast Hope trips, you know, we've taken these kids out, and I notice, you know, sometimes they show up and their hat's low and they're kicking dirt, wondering what they're doing out in the middle of nowhere, you know, just, and fast forward, you know, an hour later and their hat's swinging around and they're bug eyed and they're like, look at that. What's that? You know, and just say, man, that's called a mallard, you know, and you realize, wow, you know, maybe this kid has never seen a duck in the wild, or maybe they've, you know, and like I said, you know, the fishing aspect of it, it's just the vehicle, you know, it's all about just instilling that passion. And, you know, some kids gravitate to it and, you really stick with it, and we try to nurture that. And some, you know, it's their attention spans are short and they may enjoy it, have a good time, but we may never see them again, you know. But who knows what that moment did for them and how it will affect the rest of their life, you know.
How much do you love being a dad? You seem to me to be somebody who perhaps got the wild years out the way when you were younger. And by the time fatherhood came around, I imagine you were just so primed and ready for it. You seem to have all the characteristics that a good dad would have. Do you love it?
I'm just trying to be the best dad. I mean, every day is different. You know, I feel like I'm learning every day. You know, I mean, I feel like I have the best dad in the world, you know, and if I could be a fraction of what he was to me, to my son, then, you know, I'm doing something right. You know, it's the greatest. I mean, our son is so incredible, so full of life and excited about everything. You know, it's, if anything, I'm just trying to keep up with him. I'm 47. So, but what's wild is I remember I had the realization, we got our family together, when my dad was still around on his 80th birthday, and I had just turned 40, and my son was just born. And it hit me like a ton of bricks that, you know, my son, you know, was the same age, or I was the same age as my dad when he had me. And just that whole picture of like, oh my God, when I'm 80, he's 40. And, you know, it's the greatest. It's a tough job for sure. You know, my wife, I couldn't do what I do if it wasn't for my wife. You know, she's an absolute trooper. You know, I work, trying to make a conscious effort to spend more time at home. I recently made a decision to stop working on Saturdays and Sundays, and just keeping it for the family, especially when he's in school. I got plenty of work. There's no reason I should be away from home on Saturdays and Sundays, you know, unless I have to be, but.
I love that, man. And I got to touch on this, 'cause I think this is important for people to hear. Maybe, I don't have children of my own. And I like what you're doing with Cast Hope, because I think that it translates into you sort of being a father figure as well to the people that you're taking out. And I think that is a much greater calling too. And I can kind of relate to that in a small way, because I do think you can be sort of, fatherhood doesn't necessarily have to be your child, right? You could mentor somebody who may need a father figure that might not have one. And I think of like inner city children and people who haven't been able to have the luxury of a father. And I also think of my fiance's family who live in New York City. We had her niece and her little sister up. And there were moments that I was just blown away when they hadn't seen mountains before. They hadn't seen fireflies at night. They hadn't seen stars, shooting stars. They hadn't sat by a fire. We did all these little things within a 2-day period, showed them the first waterfall. I'll never forget this young girl just, whoa, I've only seen this shit on TV, yo. Like, she's like, yo, I've only seen this shit on TV. Those are mountains. That looks like a painting. Like,
yeah.
they're blown away and fascinated. And you see this little girl, for example, who's lived a pretty hard life, being a child, going around trying to catch fireflies, sitting in awe at the stars. Yeah. And I have these moments where I had tears forming in my eyes. Like, wow, I do this all the time. Mm-hmm. These kids have never done these things. And it dawned on me how important that is. And to have a male figure there that they're not used to having, that's explaining something to them, being positive, being gentle with them, not yelling and screaming. Like, I think what you're doing with Cast Hope is huge, huge. And I'm sure you feel that tug on your heart. It's much like when you're in an audience and you've written these lyrics that mean the world to you, and you see somebody singing them back at you, like, I get what you just said, and it puts the hair on my arms up, you know, like, that purpose that you have with what you're doing, not just as a father, but as a father figure. And I think that's the greater calling. And I commend you for that and recognizing that. And I'm like, I want to jump on board with that kind of stuff. I was thinking of this recently, how can I contribute as well? And I think you might've just planted the seed for me to maybe at some point in my life, try to reach out to inner city kids to bring them up on hikes or something. Just like that shit to me is game changing. And I'll never forget when I was a kid, when my father first showed me the stars as a inner city kid, and my dad was like, we need to start doing this. So every summer we'd go to the mountains, the White Mountains in New Hampshire, and having that first moment looking up and seeing the stars, I can still see it as clear as day, and it changed my life forever. So yeah. Cast Hope, I commend you for that work. That is
thank you
that's important
yeah, it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful night.
I'd like to ask you both about music as we kind of approach the end of the conversation, and you know, instances when songs you've written have touched people and helped inspire them. Chuck, Hot Water Music have a song called Never Going Back, which is a fairly recent song. I think it was off the last album, right? An amazing song, one of my all-time favorites by you. So powerful, so emotive. I'm guessing inspired by some perhaps dark times in your life and talking about never going back there. Could you talk a little bit about that song? Because Jesse's somebody who writes a lot about, you know, mental health and that kind of material in his work as well. And yeah, that song for me, Never Going Back, is incredible. It uplifts me whenever I hear it. I'm like, yes, ready to go out and fight another day.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I've shared about this before. It's not, you know, as a young kid, there was definitely some very dark times. And, you know, there is a side of me that is far from positive. You know, I had a lot of suicidal tendencies as a young kid, you know, and even half-ass attempted a couple times, you know. And, you know, I've written about it for years. I was very lucky to I got put away by my parents, and kind of, well, I went through a couple almost kind of charter hospital homes, you know, where they just felt like I was a danger to myself, you know, and got locked up for, you know, 30 days at a time. And that never did anything, you know. I mean, I just got put away and was in a hospital more or less with a bunch of other messed up kids. And then I would get out and get along with my folks for a while, and, you know, and then it would all start over again. And, you know, did a lot of running away from home. And, you know, finally they heard of another program at the time. It was called the Life Program. And it was a long-term treatment program, a nonprofit organization. It was down in Osprey, Florida. There used to be a program in the 80s that some people are familiar with called Straight. And there's even an old movie, I think, called Scared Straight. Anyhow, it was a very similar program to that. It was a long-term treatment facility. When I went in, you know, most kids were from the age of 12 all the way to 18. There was a few kids over 18 that were Baker-acted. But, you know, the program was more or less like they took the 12 steps of NA and AA, and they kind of condensed it down to 7 steps. But it had the same kind of elements, a serenity prayer and, you know, this and that. And I ended up being there for 3 years in my early teen years. So it was, you know, in some ways, it's hard to look back and think about how much I missed, you know, by not being in a normal school for those really impressionable years. You know, you learn so much in high school and whatnot. And but that program, I can honestly say, saved my life, you know. And I went in there. It took me a year and a half to complete the program. And then I stayed another year and a half as a staff member. It was a program where it was set up kids helping kids. So whoever was on staff had gone through the program themselves, you know. So that's what, you know, it was the first time that, you know, someone sat down with me, looked me in my eyes, and they were only a couple years older than me and said, hey, I've been through the same shit, you know, you're not alone. And, you know, that the concept of that program is you would go in and they would literally strip you of everything, and you had zero freedom. You had nothing. You couldn't go to the bathroom by yourself. You know, you weren't allowed to have a belt or shoelaces or anything like that. And then their idea was to try to get you to rebuild yourself, to reconstruct yourself, to find your spirituality, to find a reason to, you know, still get up and put your boots on and face the day. And, you know, in so many ways, you know, it really kind of defined who I am, you know, today. I mean, it was the building blocks of who I am today. It really started there, you know. And I mean, going back to our original conversation about our parents, there was a huge clash with my parents because they were putting me in that place to turn my life around. And what I did was I did turn my life around, but I found my own spirituality. You know, I found my own, and in the outdoors, you know, in everything there. And when I came out and of the program and told my folks, you know, well, this is what God is to me. You know, they said, no, that's the wrong one. That's the wrong way. And the clash started again. But I was already sure footed. I was already right where I needed to be, was just, you know, starting the building blocks of building a new life for myself, and was already on my way. But that song you're talking about is about moments like that of, you know, waking up in an alley, just, you know, as lost and just dead to the world as can be, and just never wanting to go back to that feeling, that aloneness, you know. So
I can relate as far as, you know, finding your own footing and never wanting to return to that feeling of being lost and disconnected.
Yeah.
And that right there is, man, I feel like I know there are people that are going to hear this, that it's going to have a ripple effect in their life. Cause I think a lot of people need to hear that you can find yourself without the confines of maybe how you were brought up.
Yeah.
And I always felt that it was confining. I always felt that there were periods on sentences that made no sense to me. I had constantly frustrations with that type of stuff. So it's a message that I think, you know, you almost have a responsibility to put into music, right? It's like, that's why you do it, you know? And I can totally relate to that. I love
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. I mean, music, you know, for you as well. I mean, like to us, you know, we were invited into this community and shown that music didn't have to be playing music, especially didn't have to be about making money or being famous, seeing your name in lights, or, you know, getting the girl or whatever, becoming popular, that it could be about therapy. It could be about release. It could be about finding the answer, finding just that next step to just become a better human, a better friend, a better son, you know, like whatever it was. And you know, I feel so grateful and lucky that, you know, I had a few people along the way in my life early on that, you know, taught me, like, hey, you know, I had a writing teacher at this alternative high school that I was put in, you know, when I got out of that program. And I had a creative writing class, and the teacher in there used to say, call it a creative license. She's like, everyone has a creative license. What that means is you can create anything you want. You can write anything you want. You know, she also was the one that kind of taught me. There's one exercise that she had me do where she would have me write as it go as dark as I needed to go, you know, just get it all out on paper and then burn it. And it was just so liberating and get choked up thinking about it. Cause it made a huge impact, you know, made me realize that, you know, the sun's still going to come up tomorrow, you know, and we have a choice. We have a choice to use that darkness, use those feelings to our advantage. We can go any way we want. We really can. And, you know, if there's anyone listening to this that does feel lost or, you know, where you find yourself in a place where you feel like there's no answer or there is no end, please know and understand that, you know, there's many of us out here that have felt exactly the way that you feel. And, you know, there is always something inside of you that can fight a little bit harder just to get to that next day. There's people around you, even though if it feels like there's no one, there are people that love you. There are people that forgive you. There are people that know exactly how you're feeling. Even if everything seems hopeless, you know, but, So
you're a wonderful man, Chuck Reagan. It's really good hanging out and talking to you again, man. I wanted to ask you, was there a moment or a time period when you and your parents found peace and, you know, kind of put all of the differences aside and reconnected? Because obviously, you know, I'm gathering that up until, you know, before your dad passed, your relationship with him was really strong and beautiful. And it sounds like, you know, you and your mother have a really healthy and positive connection now. So was there a moment when you all, you know, found peace together? Because I think that's important as well, because a lot of people grow up and feel, you know, anger and frustration and resentment sometimes towards their parents. But you can, you know, obviously overcome those things as well, can't you? If you're, you know, both parties are willing to meet in the middle.
It took some years, you know, it took a lot of maturing, you know, on my part, I believe. You know, because I always had that rebellion in me and I always had that fight. And anytime they would try to, you know, push, you know, their ideals on me, I would just fight. You know, there were many years where, you know, we would get along, but anytime that would come up or politics, everything would just explode, you know, and, you know, it kind of took me, you know, to just not, I can't say I went along with it, but I learned how to change the subject very well, you know? And you know, talk about food or fishing, you know.
Common ground, right? Common ground.
Yeah. It took a while, but we certainly did. We found peace, and I love my mother to death. She's wonderful. She has her own issues, and I'm learning, you know, that a lot of the stuff and that I grew up with, I know exactly where it came from now, you know. But for sure, yeah, you can always figure something out to make things work a little easier.
We're all flawed, aren't we? All human beings are flawed, and we need to recognize our own, you know, as much as recognizing and seeing other people's accountability and ownership of our own is equally important.
Yeah, that's the truth.
I feel like a lot of important things have been said in this episode, and it's been an honor, honestly, for me. I've understated a little bit my feelings towards you and your music, and you as a person now, meeting you has just been great. And I know there are people listening or watching rather that are going to walk away from this with some tools, whether that be us talking about nature and spirituality or growth, or the simple fact that, you know, you stating to people that you're not alone out there. I think all of that stuff is super important. And that's really why this podcast was even started, was to make those connections with humans and to let people know that you're not alone. And this was bred out of the pandemic when we were going through such a crazy, divisive, strange time, which continues on. And I think forever will continue on with humanity. But conversations like this one are a benchmark of why Matt and I even do this. And I couldn't thank you more for just allowing yourself to be raw and uncensored and comfortable enough to just spill everything out to the point where you got choked up. Those are the moments that I absolutely live for with this podcast. And excuse me, a little flaclamp myself. Just thanks, man, honestly. And it's all about this shit. It's so much bigger than just fucking music. It really is. It's about who you are as a person, and showing that to people, showing your vulnerability is more important than anything, you know, breaking down those walls of what it means to be a performer and a name that someone hears that name and they're like, oh yeah, that person. Taking that rock star bullshit and throwing it all away and getting down to the core of who you are as a person and why you create the art you create, to me, that's everything. So this couldn't have gone better, my friend. Thank you so much.
Well, I enjoyed starting the day with y'all. So thank you.
It was great to see you the other month as well, Chuck. I had a really good time with you and Jim from Pennywise. And yeah, I look forward to seeing you again later in the year when you're back over here.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely.
And I'm sure our paths will cross, and I will find you and give you a big damn hug.
Come check out my river. I'll come check out yours. So
I'd love it, man. Yeah, I'd love to actually, I'll talk to you, but I'd love to eventually at some point, maybe go out on one of those trips you do just to witness how it's done.
You're more than welcome. Anytime.
I'll be in touch, my friend.
Yeah. Get in touch, and I'd be happy to take you. I think we'd have a great time.
Hell yeah, brother. Maybe Matt, we can put that on the list of things we got to do with this show when we take it on the road.
Yeah, the aim is to turn it into like a YouTube TV series, Chuck. So yeah, we definitely got to do an episode over in California with you.
Great idea. Yeah.
Well, listen, right, man, have a wonderful Sunday or Saturday, whatever day it is. Is it Saturday? It's the weekend. I know it's the weekend. Sunday. You take care, my friend, and I'll see you later on in the year. And thank you again for a beautiful, beautiful chat and everything you do.
All right, love you guys. Have a great time. See you later.
Cheers, Chuck.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.